Welcome into Real Pod Wednesdays. Dan Hope joined by Andy Anders after what has been quite an eventful week in the Ohio State athletic space. A lot of sports teams in postseason competition this past week. A lot of their seasons now over. Ohio State's men's and women's basketball seasons both came to an end over the past few days. And so we are going to talk about both of those teams today, both in terms of how their seasons ended and looking ahead to the future. Spring football is also back in full swing. So we'll get into a little bit of football talk at the end of the show and then get back to heavier football talk next week. Did want to start off the show by giving out a few shout outs to a few of Ohio State's sports teams and individuals who won national championships this weekend. We mentioned last week that it could be a national championship kind of weekend for Ohio State sports, and it certainly was, starting with Ohio State's women's hockey team, which won its second national championship in 3 years. And Andy, I know, you know, you've talked about it, you know, when you have the conversation about who the best coach at Ohio State is right now, it really should start and end with Nadine Muzzaral, because you look at what she's done with that program over the past 8 years. That program had never won anything. I mean, that program had never made an NCAA tournament. It had never won even 60% of its games in a season. And now she has built that program into a legit powerhouse that has now won 2 national championships in the last 3 years.
Yeah, the list of schools that have won a women's hockey national title is pretty small when you look at it. And to compete and upend the power balance of that sport takes something spectacular, takes something special, even with maybe a limited number of teams. And what she's accomplished in her time at Ohio State is nothing short of incredible. I firmly believe she's the best coach that is employed by the Ohio State Athletics Department. Too hard to argue with 2 national titles in 3 years in a sport like that. And her coaching style has always bringing the best out of her players, coaching up skill, very aggressive play style that Ohio State has, even in a 1-0 game where, you know, they get the game winner with, you know, 7-8 minutes to play. They stay on the attack. They stay aggressive with the forecheck down the stretch. And that's the identity she's cultivated. She's an amazing recruiter, and that's only gotten better as they've won more and more. So really, this is, they say 3 national titles to a dynasty. I wouldn't be surprised if Ohio State gets a 3rd one here in the next year or two. They've got a lot of great pieces that'll come back for next year as well.
Yeah, they are losing, you know, some key seniors for sure, so they'll have to replace some key players. But you look at the team that just won the national championship. Ohio State brought in 6 transfers last offseason, and all those transfers played key roles on this team. So you would imagine that Nadine Muzzaral is going to hit the transfer portal hard again to rebuild the team, along with some of the outstanding returning talent that she will have for next year. And so we certainly expect that team is going to continue to be one to watch next year and beyond. If there's another coach who maybe would have a say in that conversation about best coach at Ohio State, it might be Emil Milev, the head coach of the Ohio State Pistol team, because Ohio State's Pistol team won its 4th national championship in a row this past weekend. Ohio State didn't just win the national championship, it dominated the competition. Ohio State had the top 5 shooters on the individual leaderboard. And even if you look at the 3 different disciplines there are at the intercollegiate pistol championships, there's air pistol, standard pistol, sport pistol. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know the difference between those 3 things, but each of them are different. And Ohio State dominated every one of them. I think they took all 3 spots on the podium in each discipline, except in one, someone from the Coast Guard finished in 3rd place. And so a dominant performance by the Ohio State Pistol team, which has certainly 4 championships in a row, has certainly become a dynasty. And you think about it, I mean, they're competing against Army, Navy, Coast Guard. I mean, most of the other schools that are competing for championships in that sport are military academies, which makes sense because you would think that military academies would be very strong in the sport of pistol, but Ohio State has become the dominant program in that sport. So certainly want to give credit to those athletes for their efforts. And then a sport that I know is near and dear to your heart, Andy, Ohio State wrestling, a big weekend for them as well, specifically for Jesse Mendez, who won the national championship at 141 pounds, becoming the Buckeyes' first national champion in wrestling since Kyle Snyder in 2018.
Jesse has a confidence that's clear about him. It's been clear since he arrived on campus, even since, you know, he was a recruit, I'm sure. And I remember talking with assistant coach Jay Jaggers before his freshman year, and him mentioning that Jesse was confident going into that freshman season that he could win the national title right off the bat as a freshman, which is super rare. Obviously, wrestling, a sport, any combat sport, really takes so much experience, so much time to cultivate your craft and rise to the top of whatever discipline you choose. Jesse, you know, he got there in year two. He surged late in the season, especially, you know, he was at the top of his weight class for much of the year, sort of in that top five range. But, you know, you talk about a guy who hadn't lost with Bo Bartlett for Penn State, you know, beat him in the dual beat between Ohio State and Penn State earlier in the year. Jesse ends up getting revenge in the Big Ten championship and then upends him in the national championship too, in a thrilling last second victory. And he's the cornerstone for what is a really young Ohio State wrestling team, because their team results weren't, you know, they finished in that top 10 range, right? But they're not like, They weren't in the title hunt. I guess no one really was with Penn State. Penn State pretty much lapped the field in terms of team points. They're ridiculous. 11 of the last 13 national championships in wrestling. But Ohio State actually might have enough young pieces to build to contend with them in the next couple of years between Mendez, Nick Feldman, who finishes an All-American, also just a second-year wrestler. He's a redshirt freshman, where Jesse is a sophomore. Rocco Welsh made the national title match at 174 pounds and coming into the season, not someone that was thought to be a title contender, and really probably not until the end of the NCAA tournament. I mean, he entered as a sixth seed. Rocco, fantastic wrestler to watch, has a really aggressive and relentless style, and but not a guy that, you know, was really thought to be in that national title conversation. Ends up making a run, and his stock and his wrestling ability has just gone like this all year. There's just so many young pieces that this team has. The one guy that they were going to lose that was a huge cornerstone for the program for so long, and Sammy Sasso, didn't end up wrestling this year. There's a long, long shot chance he wrestles next year. Of course, we know the story there with him being shot and having to recover and learning to walk again. It's just a miracle that he's doing that. We'll see if he is able to get back on the mat. That would certainly be miraculous. But either way, it's awesome what this wrestling team is building for right now.
Yeah, I mean, Sammy wasn't the only guy that they had go down of injuries too. I know there were several others in the lineup, Carson Karchla, Gavin Hoffman, who were expected to be, you know, All-American type wrestlers this season. And so, you know, the injuries really kind of derailed that team's chances of competing for a team title this year. But the fact that you have three All-Americans who are freshmen and sophomores, I think gives you a lot of hope. You know, you potentially get some of those injured guys back next year. You continue to develop your young talent. You would think that Ohio State has the makings of a really good team next year. Another team that is now officially building for the future is Ohio State men's basketball, as Ohio State's season came to an end on Tuesday night in the NIT quarterfinals. Really a heartbreaker for the Buckeyes. They had a couple shots to win it at the buzzer, but ultimately Bruce Fortin and Jameson Battle's three-point attempts were no good as the Buckeyes lost 79-77 to Georgia. But I joined you at the Schottenstein Center on Tuesday night, and when the team left the court, there was a lot of applause from the fans. A Diebler chant started from the student section, and it really did feel, even though the season ended with a, you know, disappointing loss there on Tuesday. It really did feel like the end of a season was a success. Like, this team had nothing to hang its head about after losing that game on Tuesday, because you just think about where this team was in mid-February when Chris Holtmann was fired. And there was just, there was no hope. There was no life for this program. It was, the fan base had totally checked out. You know, the players, you know, they felt like they looked defeated. And then Jake Diebler takes over. This team goes 8-3 the rest of the way this season. And it brought the life back in the fan base. Like, I think people believe in Ohio State basketball again. And now we will see, you know, does that belief actually translate to better results going forward? But I think there's a sense of optimism among Ohio State fans about this Ohio State basketball team going into this offseason that there simply hasn't been for the last few years.
Agree 100%. And, you know, that's been clear through these three NIT games. Whenever they announce Jake Diebler's name, it gets a huge pop from the crowd. I mean, there's a lot of support, a lot of belief, like you said, from this fan base in Diebler. And really, that the environment and the shot, and maybe it was because, you know, we got to sit courtside for the NIT, which is something, you know, the media normally sits behind the West End basket at Ohio Stadium, or the East End basket. I get them confused, whichever one.
I'm not good at directions either.
Yeah, right. So we usually sit behind one of the baskets. And so I think definitely on the court, things are a little louder. But even with that in mind, I think I can say with a bit of confidence that the environments in the Schottenstein Center for each of Ohio State's last two NIT games against Virginia Tech and Georgia were the best they've been all year. And that includes the upset win over Purdue. It was loud in there. I couldn't have conversations at times, which is something I've definitely dealt with in Ohio Stadium, not something I've dealt with in Value City Arena a whole lot. For a place that is known for not being as loud, not being as engaged as St. John's was, because it's so much bigger, so much more open. They closed off the upper bowl. Not as many people in the stands as, you know, some of the bigger games this season, or even a lot of them, because, you know, the Upper Bowl takes away a lot of potential seats. But the I think closing off the Upper Bowl actually made it more compact, more conducive to that sort of raucous environment. And it was just awesome to be in that arena with that support. And even afterward, you know, I think it's funny, the dichotomy between, you know, after a loss like that, I think under Holtmann, the way people were so frustrated at the end, there would have been a lot of anger, a lot of, you know, fire Holtmann, all that. But there was a lot of encouragement that I've seen, whether it be on Twitter, on our own boards at 11 Warriors, people really supportive of how this season ended. I think understanding that Georgia maybe shot a little above its weight, maybe you know, there were some bounces that didn't go Ohio State's way in a super close game. Particularly, I remember, you know, Georgia led by 13 in the second half. Ohio State comes all the way back. They make a 17-0 run to go ahead by 6 points. And then Blue Kane for Georgia has a 3-point shot that looked like it should have been a high school miss, hits the front of the rim, like not landing on top of the front of the rim, but like straight on, bounces up into the air and falls in. And then Georgia outscores Ohio State 15-7 from there, I believe it was. That was one of the things that turned the tide of the game. But the way that this team closed the season overall is establishing the identity they want to build for the future. Jake Diebler has talked about this, the aggressive play style, pushing the pace more, because he doesn't feel like they want to be stuck running half court sets against these Big Ten teams all the time with these tough physical defenses. And I think that's a great strategy. Cultivating depth, rolling a lot of players, and they shortened the rotations actually a little bit against Georgia, which I thought was interesting. Not to a huge extent, but just a few guys got a little bit fewer minutes than they have. And part of that, you know, you're without Scotty Middleton. But yeah, now the eye does turn toward the future for this team.
Yeah, we talked about it before the NIT that I think one of the biggest benefits of the NIT was going to be the opportunity to build some momentum for the future. And I think they were able to do that. I think by winning multiple games in the NIT, and to your point, generating some better environments in the Shotzi Center, generating some excitement in the fan base. I think Ohio State was able to build some momentum in the future. Now the question is, how many of those players from that team are actually going to be back next year? Because the transfer portal's open. You have to always assume that anything can happen now in the transfer portal. I think certainly the hope is that you're going to be able to keep the core of this team in place. I think particularly you look at those freshmen and sophomore classes that are now going into their sophomore and junior years. If you can keep all of those guys in place, you know, particularly Bruce Fortin, Roddy Gale, Felix Akpara, Devin Royal, Scotty Middleton. I mean, if you can keep all those five guys in place, I think that's a quality core to build around. Like, that would not be a bad starting lineup at all next year. And then if you can add some other pieces to that from the transfer portal, I mean, certainly you want to keep guys like Evan Mahaffey, you know, Tyson Chapman too, but, you know, we'll kind of see where all the pieces fall out over the next few months. But, you know, the good news is if you can keep this roster intact, and Jake Diebler said on Tuesday that roster retention, he said it multiple times that roster retention was going to be a big point of emphasis as this offseason starts. If you can keep the pieces you have intact, the pieces are there for you to build on, to have a strong foundation to, I think, have a very successful team next year. And certainly, as we talked about, roster retention was not the only reason you kept Jake Diebler. It probably wasn't even the primary reason they kept Jake Diebler, but it was a reason they kept Jake Diebler. And so it is an important task for him starting this offseason to make sure you keep the core of his team in place.
I think there was some thought that when Ohio State's coaching search started, it's like purge it all, you know, but I don't think that's where you want to be as a program. It's so hard to develop chemistry between a lot of transfers who have never played together. And so, you have talent.
It's like we saw it, I think, especially in this late stretch, but like those guys, just name it, like those guys all have a lot of upside, and they can all still get better from where they are right now. And so if you can keep those foundational pieces in place, I think that's a great starting point for next year's roster.
I totally agree. You know, I do, especially when you talk about Bruce Thornton being the guy who has run this offense now, certainly all of this year, even toward the end of last year, they have run their offense through Bruce, and so much of their offensive game plan is built around what he does, and their identity, and the chemistry he's developed, the strides that all these guys have taken. And I feel like Jake Diebler got the most out of them at the end of the year. You know, it makes sense for freshmen to come on strong at the end of the season. You look at what some of the things Devin Royal accomplished down the stretch, and that's certainly a huge piece for them to keep, especially now that they're losing Jamison Battle. You know, they need those wing guys, and that's going to be another key transfer portal addition, I think, for them, is they're going to need someone who can shoot a little more on the wings. Scotty can give them some of that if they keep him too, but they need more wing depth. But Devin is mass. We saw his talent. If he can get better on the defensive end, that's an awesome piece for next year that can play a much larger role. And in addition to what you know Bruce can give you at his best, Roddy's got more areas to grow in terms of his defense, I thought, was the biggest improvement he made in the second half of the season. But he still has ways to grow in terms of decision-making, I think, is the biggest one for him. Still saw a lot of those boneheaded mistakes as the year went on that you know, he would make some great plays. And overall consistency, too, whether that's shooting or even finishing around the rim, he had some awesome, flashy finishes, but he also missed some layups that you really should hit. And so for me, there's a lot of not only like general, but like clear areas you can point to and say, hey, this guy's good, but he can get better. And that's why retaining this roster is so important for what this program can achieve going into next year, especially when you're holding over the coach that got the most out of those guys.
Yeah, I think to me, you know, I think the number one need I see in the transfer portal is replacing Jamison Battle, because I think you have Devin Royal, who is going to, I think, be able to step up into a bigger role next year. Same thing with Scotty Middleton. But I think that scoring punch that he brought you from the power forward position, whatever you want to call it, you know, both is kind of that, you know, inside out kind of guy. I don't know if they quite have the guy on the roster for next year who can fully replace Jamison Battle. And I think, you know, too, before we continue talking to the future, we should give some love to Jamison Battle, because you know, the Chris Holtmann era in general, we can both agree that it was not the most successful era in terms of bringing in transfers. That was one of Chris Holtmann's failings that led to substandard success, was that he didn't land a lot of impact transfers. And there were a lot of guys who were projected to make a bigger impact at Ohio State than they actually did when he brought them in through the transfer portal. But Jamison Battle was, you know, a great addition by Chris Holtmann. And he was a guy that, you know, you could even just see it last night, just in how hard he played in his final game. This was a guy who played his heart out for that team. You wrote a story about it that went up on 11 Warriors on Wednesday morning about, you know, what this season meant to him and what he meant to this team. And, you know, he's a guy who you could tell he loved that he had the opportunity to play at Ohio State. He gave everything he had for that team. He wanted to keep it going as long as he could. And, you know, I think, you know, of the Chris Holtmann era, I think he was the best transfer addition that Ohio State brought in, even if he was only there for 1 year. And so certainly want to give Jamison Battle some love on his way out, because he had a very positive influence on this year's team. And I don't know. I mean, Jake Diebler said it himself, the way this team surged late in the season, I don't think that surge happens without Jamison Battle. I think he was such an important piece of that. And so I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. But when you look forward to next year, because he's out of eligibility, you know, I think he's probably the biggest guy you look at, of a guy that you know is going to be gone, that Ohio State needs to replace. Now, with that being said, it certainly appears as though Ohio State is also looking heavily for another guard right now, because they've already been linked to a few guards in the transfer portal. Most notably, Michi Johnson, who, of course, already played for Ohio State for 2 years, then transferred to South Carolina. He was the leading scorer for a South Carolina team that made the NCAA tournament this year. And as soon as he entered the transfer portal, the chatter started about the possibility that he could come back to Ohio State and play for the Buckeyes again for his final year of eligibility. Now, he just entered the portal on Tuesday, and so we'll see how things develop. But the thing that's interesting is, you know, a few weeks ago, an injunction was filed against the NCAA that prevented the NCAA from enforcing its ban on NIL and recruiting. So what that means is now NIL collectives can openly recruit players to schools. And so before Michi Johnson was even in the transfer portal, you had the foundation, the collective that focuses on basketball at Ohio State. They were putting out tweets recruiting Michi to Ohio State before he was even officially in the transfer portal. Now, if Ohio State's coaches had contacted Michi before he was actually in the transfer portal, that would be a violation. But it's no longer a violation, at least temporarily, for a collective to go and openly recruit a player before he's even in the transfer portal. And so, you know, we'll see, does that ultimately lead to Michi Johnson's return to Ohio State? He's not the only guard that Ohio State has been linked to this point. Another name to watch with Ohio State ties is Jalen Sullinger. He was the leading scorer at Kent State this year. He's the nephew of the great Jared Sullinger. And he's another guy that could certainly add some scoring punch to that backcourt, add some shooting that Ohio State certainly needs. Another name that we've heard it could be a possibility for Ohio State is Matt Aloko, a Hilliard native who averaged 12.7 points per game for Princeton this past season. He's a guy, one more year of eligibility, but the Ivy League only allows guys to play for 4 years. So he's looking for somewhere to play his final season of eligibility. So a few intriguing names there, guys who are proven double digit scorers, who Ohio State could potentially look at to add to that backcourt for next season.
Yeah, and just really quick to touch on Jameson, you know, the whole crux of that story, they say you don't have a favorite kid. I don't know if as a sports writer, I'm not supposed to have a favorite interview on a team, but Jameson was my favorite all season. Just his honesty and his wisdom really on the game. He really felt like kind of the old wise man on the team, you know, with a bunch of young guys. But in many ways, he talked about how this team brought sort of a youth, you know, he felt younger again and had this was the most fun he's ever had in a season. But the crux of that story to me was watching him after he missed the buzzer beater. I don't know if I've ever seen someone after missing a game winning shot smile. And that's what Jameson did as right after he missed it. He looked and it was, you know, it wasn't a smile to say he wasn't happy he missed the shot, but it was more of like just satisfaction on a job well done, on a career well fought. He knew he left it all on the floor, to use the cliche. And that's why he was able to just feel content in that moment and say, wow, this was really cool that I got to play college basketball at this level. You know, that gratitude, it just speaks to who Jameson is as a person. And it was also clear because he was the one consoling his teammates afterward, despite, again, being the guy who missed that buzzer beating shot. And he was the main reason Ohio State was in that position in the first place. Obviously, he was their star player throughout the game. Going back to the transfers, to me, I think Jalen Solinger honestly makes the most sense out of the three. I know a lot of people want Michi back, seeing what he's done for South Carolina. The problem is Bruce and Roddy are going to want to be your starters next year. And Michi, as great as he does scoring in volume, when you look at his shooting numbers, aren't that great from the field. A guy who's shot, you know, sub 40% most of his career, was right around 40% this season from the field. And, you know, Roddy, Bruce, they've done better than that. And now I think Michi can, he's undoubtedly bring a lot in terms of a scorer, even in terms of of assists and passing. He does well. Was obviously South Carolina's biggest star player. I think, though, Jalen Solinger is going to be willing to come off the bench for you and be more of that depth guy who can increase the rotations. Whereas there might be a sort of a ball sharing issue, and, you know, because Michi's a ball dominant player. And Jalen shot, you know, he's a career 40% three-point shooter as well. So he gives you that shooting option off the bench that I think might actually fit better, even if, ultimately I think Michi might be the better player right now, pretty close, but I think Jalen's the best fit for what Ohio State is trying to do next year. That's just my take on the situation. I think there's definitely an argument to be had that, you know, given what Michi accomplished at South Carolina, that's a guy that's a no-brainer for some people. But to me, that's kind of where I stand on those, you know. And then, and Matt Aloko, like you said, is someone that you keep an eye on, but I feel like he's more of a he'd be a true depth addition, I think, you know, coming out of the Ivy League, would give some experience. But you know, I'll be interested to see too. You know, it doesn't really feel like we've gotten a lot of development in terms of the search for a new wing. They definitely need one to replace Jameson. So I think that's the bigger area to address. They need someone who might even need to start out there on the wings and replace that shooting, that scoring ability. So I'll be really curious to see what names emerge here in the coming days, as I'm sure some will.
We've obviously seen now that Jake Diebler can coach in game and that he can bring some energy to the program. But these next few weeks may ultimately be more telling of what Jake Diebler can be as a head coach. Now, I think, is when he really has to start proving his mettle in terms of roster retention, in terms of bringing in transfer additions. This is a pivotal time now. You know, he was asked after the game, do you take a moment now to you know, exhale and reflect on these last few months have been like. And he said, you know, the way the college basketball calendar is, I can't do that right now. It might happen eventually, but not right now, because, you know, now it's very important for him. He's got to continue filling out his staff. You know, Dave Dickerson was hired earlier this week to be one of his assistants, but we expect there will be more coaching staff moves to come. And then certainly, you know, building out that roster for next year, which again, they might only, if the roster retention goes as expected, they might only need a couple pieces, but they do need a couple pieces, you know, likely in the form of, you know, a guard who can, you know, bring some additional scoring along with, you know, Bruce and Roddy and, you know, Junie Mobley coming in, and then, you know, another forward as well to, you know, replace Jameson Battle, pair him there with Devin Royal and Evan Mahaffey and Scotty Middleton. And I think the pressure on Jake Diebler has only now increased, because on Saturday, Michigan hired Dusty May, who we had talked about a lot during the coaching search as someone who was a potential front runner to be Ohio State's head coach. And then Ohio State ended up deciding to hire Jake Diebler. And now Dusty May is going to go coach Ohio State's rival instead. And so that adds another twist to how Jake Diebler's tenure is going to be evaluated, because Ross Bjork's decision here, his first big hire here, is now going to be judged on whether Jake Diebler in his Ohio State program can outperform Dusty May in his Michigan program.
Yeah, the next few years, whether it's in comment sections, whether it's in my own stories, they're going to be comparing Jake and Dusty for obvious reasons. Dusty and Jake were clearly the two finalists for the Ohio State job. I think that much was clear at the end of the search. And whether it was, you know, Jake's ability to motivate this team, whether it was Jake's abilities as recruiters, whatever it was, he ultimately won the job over Dusty. And now Dusty ends up at the arch rival school, Michigan. I think Michigan's in a worse spot right now than Ohio State is for the future. Just that, I mean, that's that much is apparent kind of on their record. But by the same token, easier to rebuild in basketball than it is, say, football, because a few key players can completely shift the outlook of a team very quickly. That's easy to add now through the transfer portal. Not easy, but, you know, it's much more doable than football, where you have so many positions to worry about. It takes so many guys to change the fabric of a program, and it's easier to have impact young players in basketball, freshmen, sophomores, than it is football. So that is in Dusty's favor in terms of rebuilding Michigan quickly, but it still might be a year or two before we see what he's truly capable of in his first high major job. These are both guys in their first high major head coaching jobs. Jake and Dusty, there's also a salary discrepancy there. Don't know the exact details of whether an offer was made to Dusty, if contract details were discussed with Dusty in terms of being Ohio State's head coach. He'll make $3.75 million as his salary at Michigan, while Jake Diebler is getting $2.5 million at Ohio State. I don't think money ultimately played too much of a deciding factor in this decision from Ross Bjork to hire Jake Diebler ultimately, but it is notable, the discrepancy there. So these two guys, for as long as they are the head coaches, and probably for at least several years after, at these two schools, given that they're the biggest rivals with one another, they're going to be compared. They're going to be compared constantly by both fan bases. And, you know, if you're an Ohio State fan, you just hope that Jake ultimately has more success at Ohio State than Dusty does at Michigan. And you're not sitting there regretting the fact that Ohio State didn't go harder after Dusty May, who was maybe more of the proven asset in this coaching search, even with, again, noting the great achievements Jake has had down the stretch of this season.
I don't think we would have guessed a month ago that Ohio State's women's basketball season would end before the men's basketball season. Would you have, Andy?
Absolutely not.
No, that was definitely not something that was expected, because, I mean, we didn't even know, you know, would Ohio State men's basketball even be in a postseason tournament? Obviously, Ohio State men not making the NCAA tournament, which the women did, but the women falling short of expectations for sure in the NCAA tournament on Sunday, as the number 2 seed Buckeyes fell to number 7 seed Duke 75-63 in a home game at the Schottenstein Center. You look at the 16 teams that were seeded 1 through 4. Those are the 16 teams that hosted first and second round games this weekend. Ohio State was one of just 3 of those teams to lose on its home court this weekend. They're the only top 3 seed in a women's tournament that didn't make the Sweet 16. And they're the only top 2 seed in either gender to not make the Sweet 16. And so, certainly a disappointment for those Buckeyes, especially when paired with how the Big Ten tournament went, where the Buckeyes were blown out by Maryland in their first game there. And, you know, there was talk in the middle of the season about, you know, Kevin McGuff saying that he felt like this team was peaking at the right time, and yet it feels like they peaked a little too soon again. And then they kind of fizzled out there in the end of March, losing 3 of their final 4 games of the season. And, you know, I think as good as this team was for most of the year, there were always a couple of underlying flaws that gave me a little bit of pause with this team in terms of projecting a deep NCAA tournament run. And I think the biggest one was rebounding. Rebounding was an issue for this team all year. Ohio State was out-rebounded on average by 2.4 rebounds per game. That was the second worst margin in the Big Ten, ahead of only Northwestern, which was one of the worst teams in the conference. You look at all 6 of their losses this season, Ohio State was out-rebounded by at least 7 rebounds. So if you're just looking for a common thread for why this team fell short of expectations in the postseason, it was the rebounding. They grabbed only 20 rebounds in the loss to Duke. I tried to research when was the last time Ohio State had only 20 rebounds in a game, and I got to a point where I couldn't find enough of a box scores to find the last time Ohio State only had 20 rebounds in a game. I went back like 15 years, and they hadn't had that few rebounds in any game. And so I think that's certainly point number one of why Ohio State failed to make it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. You know, they had an off shooting night as well. They didn't make a single three pointer until the final 12 seconds of the game against Duke. They shot 6% below their average overall, 40.7 compared to 46.7. But off shooting nights are going to happen in basketball, you know, men or women. They're going to happen. You have to be able to overcome that. And the reason why they couldn't overcome that was the fact that they were terrible on the glass. And so I think you still go back to the rebounding as a fatal flaw for this team, so to speak, in terms of how the postseason went for them. And then I think the lack of depth was a problem for this team as well. I mean, I think the starting lineup Ohio State had was certainly one of the best in the country this year, with J.C. Sheldon being an All-American, Cody McMahon being a fellow first-team All-Big Ten player, Celeste Taylor, a Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. Taylor Fury also earned All-Big Ten honors. Rebecca Miklashkova was an All-Big Ten honorable mention. But they just never had a whole lot of production off the bench behind that starting 5. And I think in this game, that got exacerbated by the fact that Celeste Taylor got into foul trouble. She ended up fouling out midway through the fourth quarter. And if you look at the game, once she fouled out, it really fell apart for Ohio State. Duke really kind of took over the game from that point forward, because Ohio State's defense, she's such a big part of Ohio State's defense, that when they took her off the court, they just weren't able to come up with the stops they needed to stay in the game against Duke. And, you know, I think with Rebecca as well, I think, you know, she's a player who kind of had a lot of ups and downs in her Ohio State career. And there were games that she was great, but there were games that, you know, she struggled. And I think this was one of those games where she struggled. I think Duke was able to, you watch the game, they were running a lot of their offensive plays to exploit her. And I think, you know, she, you know, struggled with the matchups in that game. But the problem was Ohio State didn't have anyone they could bring in off the bench to give them a better matchup. And so when I look ahead to the future for this Ohio State women's basketball program, I mean, certainly the big thing is you have to replace three starters. JC Sheldon, Celeste Taylor, Rebecca Mikulashukova are all out of eligibility. But just in a widespread sense of what this team needs in order to make a deeper run next year and beyond, number one, I think they have to be better at rebounding than they were this year. And number two, they need to have more depth. They can't be as heavily reliant on their starting five as they were this year.
I think that ties in well. We talked about transfer portal additions for the men's team. I think the women's team, it's going to be important to add some transfers. And for me, the number one thing is go get a center who can be that elite rebounder, elite defender too. You know, I've been probably too harsh on Rebecca in certain conversations. I do think there were some good offensive qualities she had as a shooter. You know, think about her shooting 40% from three as a center. That's really good, obviously. But, you know, the inconsistencies defensively, rebounding, and they were especially prevalent against Duke, where there were plays where she was just standing under the rim as Duke was putting up a shot, not boxing anyone out. They get an offensive rebound and put it back. I mean, you needed more effort from her on the glass, from the team. You can't put it on any one player, from the team on the glass in that game. And getting that true blue center, and, you know, maybe true to the McGuff style, it might be hard to find someone who can run the floor really well too. But if you can get that and have a deep rebounder and have a defender, that would be the real trifecta of a center you want in the transfer portal right now. I think that is probably the number one area you need to address. That, and, you know, getting another guard that can be someone who can be a really good scoring threat, really good on-ball defender, replace some of the things that, you know, JC Sheldon gave you, that Celeste Taylor gave you. This is going to be an important offseason of development and transfer portal acquisition. The good news is you get Cody McMahon back. That's the biggest piece. And there were times it felt like she was the only one who remembered there was a game in that Duke game that Ohio State was playing that day. She is a superstar. And Ohio State's got to be grateful that she's back for more next year. She'll be the piece they build around, but they definitely need to hit the portal and get her some help.
Yeah, to your point about Rebecca, she averaged 3.2 rebounds per game this year. And that's just not good enough for a starting center. Like you said, she had her positive qualities, but you need more from a rebounding perspective from your starting center. And before this year, when you look at a lot of times when this Ohio State team has struggled, it's a lot of times it's when they've gone against a really good center. Now, to your point, you know, the full court press is such a big part of what Kevin McGuff does that you have to have a player who can run the floor. But, you know, one way or another,
it's not like she did that particularly well either.
Yeah,
though.
I mean, the rebounding for sure has to improve. And Kevin McGuff did say that when I asked him about how do you improve in that area for next year, he did say, I think the number one thing we have to look at is personnel. And can we add players to help us in that regard? So I absolutely agree that I think the number one point of emphasis here in the transfer portal is going to be adding a post player to help with that rebounding. I think you have two really good foundational pieces to build around in Cody McMahon and Taylor Fury. But for this team, especially in women's basketball, because we talk about it in men's basketball, it's become a lot harder to win with young players. But especially in women's basketball, because you don't have players leaving early to go pro. And so you have to have a really strong core of veteran players to have a chance to be a real contender in this sport. And so I think they need two high quality transfers who can come in and be starters next year alongside Cody and Taylor. I think if they do that, I think they can have a pretty good roster next year. They have Jelani Cambridge coming in, who's the number three overall prospect in the nation. She's a really talented guard. So you would imagine that, you know, she could potentially be in the starting lineup right away, or at the very least is going to play a major role in that backcourt rotation. You know, I think Madison Green, if she can, you know, stay fully healthy, you know, knee injuries have been a big issue for her, but, you know, she did, you know, produce more as the season progressed. She's someone else who can help you at that point guard spot, you know, assuming health there. She's already said she will return for her extra year of eligibility. I think Diana Collins is a rising sophomore to watch in that backcourt as well. They have another top 100 prospect coming in, Ava Watson at point guard. So they've got some talent at guard there, but I think they still need to add a proven established veteran who can come in and start in the backcourt to replace, you know, two major losses in JC Sheldon and Celeste Taylor. And then, you know, we'll kind of see how the depth, you know, of returning players, young players, kind of builds around them, because I think that's going to be the big thing. I think if you can add two quality transfers and then you can build more depth in your young players, I think you have a chance to have a really good team next year. I think if those things don't happen, then you're probably looking at Ohio State taking a step back from being the Big Ten regular season champion that it was this year.
Two very interesting off seasons upcoming on both Ohio State men's and women's basketball for different reasons. You know, one program looking to sustain the regular season success it had and fix the flaws that cost it in the postseason. The other hitting the reset button in some ways, not from a roster retention perspective, but with a new coach and building sort of this new identity that they've started to cultivate over the stretch of the season. Wouldn't be a real Pod Wednesdays episode if we didn't get to some football talk, though, Dan. Money still happening and spring cracked in full swing. Now that basketball season's over, these next set of Real Pod Wednesdays are going to get a lot more football heavy as we prepare for the spring game. But I think probably the biggest thing maybe that for Ohio State fans to get excited about this week was Jeremiah Smith adding some more coal, stoking the furnace of the hype train, if you will, with a black stripe removal that broke the record for earliest black stripe removal from a freshman. Got it removed before Caleb Downs, who also lost his just recently. We actually watched him lose it on Tuesday, but The Jeremiah Smith hype continues, and we've talked about him at length. The hype that has built around him, not only from his recruiting profile, even from this black stripe removal, but also the word freak that continues to be tossed around every time you ask somebody about him is just freak, you know? And watching that clip that Ohio State put up on social media, even, of Jeremiah Smith's sort of practice highlights, or a few of those practice highlights, he was making fantastic toe-tapping sideline catches, juked Sonny Styles out of his shoes. Perhaps there's a reason he's moving to linebacker, no longer being in the open field so much as a safety anymore. But in any case, the talent is so clear with this kid, and the hype just keeps on building, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, so many times you see it where coaches with a talented freshman, you know, they'll try to kind of throw some cold water on the flames, but the hype, a lot of times they'll kind of try to, you say, hey, you know, he's young, you know, we'll see. But nobody's doing that with Jeremiah. It's just consistently talking him up. And I think that tells you how special a talent he is, and the fact that, you know, this guy's going to play right away. Whether he will start, I don't know, because we're hearing a lot of really good things about Brandon Innes too. And I think Brandon Innes is another guy who I think his stock is really rising right now. And so I think they've got four wide receivers in Emeka Buka, Carnell Tate, Brandon Innes, and Jeremiah Smith, who one way or another, all those guys are going to see a lot of playing time. All those guys are going to make an impact this year, but it just becomes more and more clear by the week that, you know, they're not going to slow play anything with Jeremiah. Like, this guy is special, and he's going to be a guy to watch. And I know I'm really excited, as I'm sure you are, Andy, that we get to go to the Student Appreciation Day practice on Saturday. And this is typically the first time that we get to kind of see some real football. You know, usually when they have the media open windows of practice, we kind of get to see some individual drills, and then we get ushered out before the real stuff happens. But typically at the Student Appreciation Day, we get to see some 11-on-11. We get to see some real football. And I know for me, one of the first guys my eye is going to go on is Jeremiah Smith, because I hope we get to see him make some of those plays. We've seen some of the clips on him on Twitter, because he's certainly an exciting player to watch. I think a lot of students there, I certainly, if you are a student out there listening, I highly recommend going to the WAC on Saturday. It's a really cool event, and I think a lot of those students are going to be hoping they get to see some fireworks from Jeremiah Smith as well.
Yeah, not just him, but this entire group of young receivers, as we discussed. You know, I think the Brandon Ennis hype is real. He's someone I've been really high on. I know you've been really high on. And he and Carnell have been pushing each other really hard this offseason. It's clear in each other's faces. These are guys that are really close off the field, have been friends for a while now, even before they got to Ohio State. And the way they express their friendship in many ways, you know, when I talked to Brandon about Carnell, he said their relationship is built on competitiveness, on just being in each other's faces, bringing the most out of each other. And that is something you want to hear from, you know, two of the guys that are going to be centerpieces of the receiver rotation this year behind Emeka Ebuka. And both of those, all four of them, Jeremiah, Emeka, Brandon, Carnell, I think you can do a lot of different things flexibility-wise with where you line those guys up. I think Emeka is, you know, he's played a lot of slot throughout his career, but he's played outside too, and I think he's going to get a lot of use outside this year. Brandon is more of a slot guy, but I think you could definitely have lineups where any combination of those four get on the field, because Emeka's got the ability to play anywhere. Brandon gives you that slot. I think Jeremiah could sneakily play pretty much anywhere along the receiver rotation, whether it be XZ or the slot. So there's a lot of versatility too, which is going to allow Ohio State to get really creative with where they're throwing their fastballs and curveballs from in certain formations with those four players. You know, and the other Caleb Downs, like we said, lost his black stripe on Tuesday. Quinshon Judkins also lost his. I think when you talk about transfers, those were the two most talented ones that Ohio State picked up. So it's not a surprise that they were the first to lose their black stripes. But I think also another two players that fans are really excited about right now. And, you know, that again, the hype keeps building really for this team with these black stripe removals. However much of a grain of salt you want to take them with is fine. But I think for a lot of people, these are it's a nice thing to see players getting ingrained and officially becoming Buckeyes this early on.
Another two players that we know Buckeye fans are excited about are Sonny Styles and CJ Hicks. And we got a chance to talk to both of them last week. And I think one thing that, you know, stood out from talking to them is they both talked about they don't really view it as a competition between them at will linebacker, but they feel like there's going to be opportunities either way where both of those guys are going to be on the field together. And we'll see how much that ultimately materializes, because I feel like, you know, that's been kind of one of those things where we've kind of heard a lot every year during the spring about, yeah, 4-3 packages, using that Sam linebacker more. And then during the season, it kind of varies how much they actually use that stuff. A lot of times it's kind of been more exclusive to when they've played run-heavy teams rather than a core component of the defense. But I also think, you know, those are the kind of guys we've talked about them at length already this offseason. A couple of 5-star prospects going into their junior years. Those are both guys that need to have roles in this defense, and are both guys who have the physical tools to do a lot of different things. And so I think you have ways you can get creative with those guys. You can create different matchups with those guys on the field, which maybe are a little different than what you would have done in a free linebacker package last season.
Yeah, it definitely is something that makes a lot of sense against those 12 personnel packages, as we've talked about before. I think another interesting takeaway I had from the just the defensive interviews we had this week was Jason Moore. And being the first name out of the next set of defensive tackles behind Ty Hamilton and Tyleek Williams, being the next name that seems to be prevalent in Larry Johnson's mind there, obviously out of Dematha Catholic High School, same high school Chase Young is from, was a fairly highly touted high school prospect. Jason Moore was. But to me, you know, I think Hero Canoe and Cade McDonald were the two, and Larry did talk them up as well. But those were the two defensive tackles that you felt like those are the next guys up. It seems like Jason has leapfrogged them in some ways. Larry talked about he's taken the biggest jump, the most sort of a surprising leap this spring to enter the conversation for playing time. And a guy I thought might be a year away this year with Hero and Caden. But I think he is a physical freak. 6'5", 295 is what Larry said he's at now. And at three technique defensive tackle, when you have the athletic traits that he has there, that's a pretty nice size weight, nice size combo to be at. So I think that's a player that my stock, I'm investing in, man. I'm investing some stock into buying stock in Jason Moore this year, based off those Larry Johnson comments and the talent we know that he has.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like you should. And I think that whole defensive line rotation in general is going to be interesting this season, because we know, I mean, their starting defensive line might be the best in the country with Jack Sawyer, JT Tuimoloau, Tyleek Williams, and as Larry Johnson described him, the quote unquote sleeping giant, Ty Hamilton. I mean, that's right there. Those are four great defensive linemen, and how much is Larry going to really want to take them off the field? We saw last year he really didn't want to take them off the field that much. But, I mean, you've got Caden Curry, Kenyatta Jackson, who at this time a year ago, we probably would have projected would be the starting defensive ends right now, because we thought Jack Sawyer and JT Tuimoloau would be in the NFL. You got Hero Canoe, Caden McDonald, guys who flashed when they played last year. And you have a guy like Jason Moore coming along. I mean, you have a guy like Edric Houston, a five-star recruit at defensive end. Could he get in the mix? So a lot of pieces there. It's going to be interesting to see. My feeling is I think early in the year, some of those non-conference games, we're going to see a lot of guys working there. The question is, when you get to, say, that Oregon game in the middle of October, will we see deeper rotations at that point to keep guys fresh? Or will Larry at that point really rely on that core group of guys who we already know are really good? It'll be interesting to see, because as Larry mentioned himself, you have the possibility of playing 17 games this year. So I think depth and rotation are going to be increasingly important at every position. And I think that's probably the number one you look at. Defensive line is a position where you don't want to wear those guys out too much, but at the same time, like, those guys are really good. I mean, if Jack Sawyer keeps playing the way he played down the stretch last season, if Tyleek Williams keeps playing the way he played all last year, how much do you really want to take those guys off the field? So that's going to be an interesting conversation for Larry Johnson, and one that we'll certainly be tracking as we get into the season here later this year. The big story right now still kind of hanging over this Ohio State football program is the fact that Ohio State still doesn't have a running backs coach. And, you know, we talked last week that Ryan Day was, you know, optimistic Ohio State would land a, quote, excellent running back coach. But it does appear now that, you know, several of the names that we thought would be at the top of that list last week are now out of a running. DeMarco Murray, who seemed to be trending toward getting the job, ended up signing an extension to stay at Oklahoma. Robert Gillespie, all indications are he's going to stay at Alabama. Scotty Graham, who is a guy who I think made a lot of sense to us as an Ohio State alumnus, the word is that he's going to stay at Washington. Stan Drayton, it sounds like, you know, that they might have tried to get him, but the buyout situation that he would have had at Temple was maybe not something that maybe not a road that they wanted to go down. And so as we sit here today, there's still no clear front runner for this job. And I think certainly when you think about, you know, maybe why is this search not going, you know, as smoothly or as quickly as people would have expected, I think timing has a lot to do with that. When, you know, when your coach leaves in the middle of spring practice, all the other teams are in spring practice right now too. So how many coaches want to leave their team in the middle of spring practice to go somewhere else? Tony Alford didn't mind doing it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that other coaches want to. And so I think that's certainly kind of maybe a roadblock here that's kept a hire from already happening. But you know, Ryan Day said it last week too. They're going to take their time with this to make sure they found the right guy. He didn't feel like they needed to rush into a hire here for a couple reasons. One, because they have Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, and running back is not like offensive line or quarterback where you necessarily need a ton of in-depth, intricate coaching with guys. It's a position that you have guys like Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins. They're going to be okay if they go through most of a spring without having a dedicated running backs coach. And certainly Ryan Day, Chip Kelly are working really closely with those guys to make sure they don't get behind in their development. I think if you are putting a deadline on when Ohio State really does need to have a running backs coach in place, I think it would be at the end of spring, because right after spring ends, the post-spring transfer window opens. And so I think if you don't have a running backs coach in place at that time, maybe you have a little more reason to worry, because maybe the running backs in the room start thinking, well, I don't even know who my coach is going to be. Maybe I should go somewhere else. So I think it is important that you have a plan in place by before the spring transfer window opens. But I think for right now, even though spring practices are continuing along, I don't think Ohio State's in a dire situation here. I don't think Ohio State needs to panic here, and you don't want to make a panic hire, because you know you are Ohio State. You want to have one of the best running backs coaches in the country, and I still believe, you know, biding their time here, they're going to be able to get a really high quality running backs coach. Because again, I mean, if I was a running backs coach, I would sure want to coach Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins.
Yeah. So I, you know, I think after spring football, the Ohio State's chances do go up, but like you said, you don't want to wait too long on that. And we'll see if they can get that figured out.
I think for me, the highlight of Pro Day was just getting to catch up with CJ Stroud. CJ Stroud was there for the entire Pro Day, was there to support his teammates, and he generously took some of his time after the Pro Day to meet with the local media, which, you know, quite frankly, you know, he does not have to do. I mean, he's an NFL star now. You know, he certainly did not have to come and generously spend time talking with Ohio State reporters, but he did. And I think the cool thing about talking to CJ is the guy just hasn't changed at all. He's the same guy that he was at Ohio State. He loves football. He is who he is. I think he's actually more comfortable in his own skin now than he ever was at Ohio State. And I think it's really cool, because I think, you know, we talked about it before with CJ. I mean, I think this is a guy who, you know, probably took a lot more criticism at Ohio State than he deserved. Probably was never fully appreciated the way he should have been at Ohio State as the most prolific passer Ohio State has ever had. And I think now he is getting that love because, for one, he's become an NFL star. And I think, too, I think as time passes, I think people realize just how good he was at Ohio State and how much he should have been appreciated during his career. And so, you know, I think it's really cool to see the love that he still has for Columbus. You know, I think, you know, I mean, there were other former players there too. He was not the only one. I mean, Jonathan Cooper was there. Draymond Jones was there. You know, several others were there as well. So not to say that other players don't have that same love for him, but he's so open about just like how much Ohio State means to him. And I think that's really cool. I think you think about what he's doing now in the NFL. I mean, I don't think Ohio State could ask for a better ambassador right now than it has in CJ Stroud, especially at a position where Ohio State has had a reputation for many years of not producing quality NFL players. CJ is the guy who's breaking that mold. And for him to do so all the while consistently talking about how Ohio State and Ryan Day helped him get there, I think is such a great ambassador for the program to have. And I think the fact that he welcomes that. I mean, he wasn't just at Pro Day. He's been at like multiple practices since then. Like he's just been hanging around the team. And like, I mean, I even remember it when he was at the game. I don't remember which game it was where he was on College Game Day before the game last year. And he was down there on the sideline. And it was like, he was just one of the guys. It's like, I think he just genuinely just likes being around the program, likes being around the guys. And that's just really cool to see, because he's a guy that you know, I mean, you see him like, you know, he's hanging out with celebrities now. Like, this is a guy who he could be of the mindset that college was college and that's behind me and I'm bigger than that now. And he just is the opposite of that. It's like he truly loves coming back to Ohio State and being around the program. And that's such a cool thing. And it's certainly something that I think the current players appreciate, getting to spend time with him and knowing how much he supports them.
Yeah. CJ is a Buckeye through and through. And I always appreciated him in interviews, both for his openness and his, I mean, just his play recall too, was always so impressive. He could break down exactly what was going through his head, what he saw, what the play call was, what the defense was. It was just like, his knowledge of the game, regardless of what any S2 cognition test said, is elite. And that was always reflected in his interviews, and he was always willing to really dive in with us, be open, be honest. You always appreciate that in a player. And as much as that you can know CJ Stroud as a media member, I think CJ is someone that I've always rooted for personally, because he just seems like a great person and a humble kid who, you know, wants to, like you said, be around the people that helped get him to where he is now. And he wants to give back to Ohio State. And I think a lot of Buckeye fans can appreciate both what he accomplished while he was at Ohio State and how he is promoting the program now, like you said, as an ambassador.
Well, as we mentioned, we will be at Student Appreciation Day on Saturday. So should be a great chance for us to watch the Buckeyes in person and learn more about this team. And so we look forward to being back here on Real Pod Wednesdays next week to share what we learned from that, as well as talk about whatever might start to unfold as the basketball offseason begins. So we hope you'll join us again then. Have a great week.